A lot of time and effort is often wasted by language learners because they don't start out with a clear idea as to why they want to learn the language. What do they want to learn to use the language for? Often the teachers are to blame. A student comes along and says, "I want to learn English." And the teacher hands out a standard course all done up in a packet. Personally, I'm inclined to believe that no one ought to learn a foreign language until he knows why, even if that means learning quite late. Now let's take three extreme cases. Dr. A is a scientific worker at a remote research station. It's extremely unlikely that he will ever have much occasion to meet or converse with English-speaking people. He wants the language to keep up to date with work which is being done abroad, and all of which is reported in English. Now, Mr. B. Mr. B is a student of science or technology in a college, or perhaps he's a worker in a factory or in a laboratory of a firm producing for export. English is the chief international language for his work, and he must become reasonably proficient in it if he wants to get on. Now we have Mr. and Mrs. C. Mr. and Mrs. C are people who are learning English for a hobby, with the idea of spending their holidays in England. Now Dr. A, the scientist, merely needs reading ability. It's true that a short course, a year or less, in oral work is a useful preface to learning to read, although many dispense with it, as in the classical languages, Latin and Greek. However, it is useful for him to have a fairly correct set of sounds. What he does need is a very large recognition vocabulary, including a good knowledge of the roots, prefixes and suffixes, so that he can break up and interpret technical words such as hept-ode, hept-7, ode, electrode, heptode, a seven-electrode valve, and so on, telangiectasis, distant, small blood vessel, enlargement of. Now, Mr. B, that was the technical student or the laboratory worker or the factory hand. He needs to speak and understand scientific and technical matters only. He doesn't need to discuss personal or social or domestic matters at all. He uses his own native language for that, his mother tongue. He has no need of all that paraphernalia and duplication required to cope with emotional undertones of conversation, which, by the way, I'll discuss in a moment. Emotion has no place in science. Things are not huge or tiny or bitterly cold or sizzling hot. They are merely abnormal, above normal or below normal. The first lesson of a scientist is to use words accurately. Temperature is not the same thing as heat. Stress and strain do not mean nervous tension. The structure and the grammar needed are the absolute minimum which is adequate, without descending into pidgin, or, as too often with scientists, soaring into pomposity. He does not need to say, "An endeavour was made," but he says, "We tried." "For if it be it, should it be," he says, "if it is." At least a third of the structure in the ordinary grammar may be thrown out. The learner may recognize these things in print. We might even learn to use them very much later. But they, as well as a lot of loose or pompous vocabulary, are not essentials. Now we come to Mr. and Mrs. C. They are very different. They are not merely learning to speak English. They are learning to converse in English. They are learning English conversation. And conversation is a very different thing from mere speaking. Conversation is a form of behavior. It involves pronunciation, intonation, gesture, and a whole lot of words and phrases which do not mean what they say, or mean the exact opposite, or don't mean anything at all. You've been so kind.
So indeed I have.
But I answer, oh no, not at all, not at all. I am deeply distressed at a friend's misfortune. What do I say? All I say is, bad show. But when I don't know what to say, while I'm thinking of the right answer, why then I pour out a burble of utterly meaningless delay words. My friend says, well, how much money do you want for it? And I say, well, now, yes, 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 now, let me think, let me see. Yes, yes, and now at last I'm ready to talk, say, £2.10. Intonation often says more than words. Listen to this conversation. The nine wells. Well, 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 oh well. What does that mean? I'll tell you, my friend has just carried our scheme to the manager, and he has come back to report. And so I say, well? And he said, meaning no, he refused it. Well, I'm surprised and angry. Oh, well, well, well. Regret and resignation. Well, well, my friend says, surely you're not going to give up. Well, I'm doubtful. Oh, well, I suppose we must keep on trying. A good half, if not three quarters, of conversation is emotional. Either it expresses emotion or it represses it, as in bad show. Or very often it avoids exciting it. Throughout any conversation, delicate little tendrils of a feeling, touching, shrinking between the two persons. Now, Mr. B, the laboratory or factory worker, certainly does not need all these phrases of emotion and politeness, all this machinery of language as behaviour, all this how do you do, not at all, it is, isn't it, don't you think, and other devices for softening the bold statement. He wouldn't say, this is the starter switch, or isn't it? Yet these are just the very things that Mr. and Mrs. C do need. And this is just where so many of the language courses and textbooks prepared for them are so very defective. Language as behaviour should be taught as a form of behaviour from the very start. That is the easiest way, the realistic way. In fact, it's the only way. Yet where does the word well come? Somewhere in the second book, or after the 20th or 30th lesson, if as soon, if at all. And yet it is perhaps the most frequent, the most necessary word in the conversation vocabulary. Some people seem almost incapable of starting a sentence without it. It can express eight different emotions. You've heard seven of them already. The other would be a feeling of pleased admiration as at the sight of a girl's new frock. Well, the common beginning of a first English lesson goes something like this. What is this? Y answers, that is a pencil. Is this a pencil? No, it is not. What is it? It is a pen. Now, in real life, as linguistic behaviour, this conversation would be more like this. Excuse me, what's this?
That.
Yes, what's the English word?
That's a pencil.
A pencil? Oh, thank you, thank you.
Not at all.
Is this a pencil?
No,
not.
Then what is it?
That's a ball pen. Oh, yes, yes, a ball pen. Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Here's another point. You're a visitor to England. Do you really want to describe your hotel room or to say what you and other people are doing? I am sitting in a chair. Mr. East is reading a book. Of course not. And yet we find these things given a high priority, possibly because they involve only the verb is, and not that awkward do, do not. And yet, as a visitor, your main concern is with wants. What do you want? Do you want this? No, I do not. You can't go without your lunch because you're restricted to verbs which do not require do in questions and negatives. In fact, what Mr. and Mrs. C. need is a full outfit of English as behavior. Structures, cliches, intonations, gesture, with a very modest naming vocabulary. There aren't many things they need to talk about, and they'll pick up the rest as they go. How they talk is what matters. Now, Mr. B, the student of science or the laboratory worker, how he talks is not so important, so long as he's understood. It isn't essential for him to have a perfect English accent. He needs to understand spoken English, but most of the speakers he meets in his work will have learnt to adjust their speech to local needs. He needs none of the behaviour and emotive apparatus. He doesn't need any high or low stylistic levels. He needs just plain, flat, accurate symbols of the contents of his subject or his craft. Whereas Dr. A, the scientific worker, hardly needs to talk at all. He is purely receptive. Now, I'm talking to teachers of English. Have you asked your pupils why they are learning English? Are you giving them the sort of English which they need? If, as is very often the case, they want English conversation, are you teaching them merely English speech? Or, if they merely need English as a conveyor of information, are you teaching them the paraphernalia of English as behavior? Or, if English is needed merely passively as an access to knowledge, are you cumbering them with the active use of the grammar? In fact, are you giving them what they need, or are you just handing out a standard mixture like a lazy doctor who can't be bothered to diagnose his patient?